I'm Don Glass.
Support for today's programs comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held every Saturday from 2 to 6. Information is available at 337-7704 or at thecorkscrew.com.
20 minutes before 3 o'clock. In sports, Chicago White Sox manager Ozzie Guillen says first baseman Paul Konerko and outfielder Alex Rios will not play in tomorrow's spring training opener against the Los Angeles Angels. Konerko is getting an extra day of rest, and Rios has a sore right shoulder that Guillen said is not serious. Rios told the Chicago Tribune that his shoulder is fine. Illinois has lost for the fourth time in five games. Number 6 Ohio State topped the Illini 73-57 to clinch at least a share of the Big Ten title last night in Columbus, Ohio. Let's take a look now at other sports stories, other basketball, men's basketball stories. Northwestern closes out its home basketball schedule with a non-conference game tonight. The Wildcats host Chicago State. A victory tonight would be the 19th victory for Northwestern, a single-season record for the Wildcats. Eastern Illinois will play top-seeded Murray State in the semifinals of the Ohio Valley Conference Tournament Friday in Nashville. The Panthers improved to 19-11 with last night's victory over Eastern Kentucky. And one more Big Ten note, seventh-ranked Purdue and struggling Indiana face off today with more than their in-state rivalry on the line. The Boilermakers are in the hunt for a Big Ten title, but are coming off a loss to Michigan State. The Hoosiers, meanwhile, have lost 10 in a row and would surely welcome a win. That's sports.
Our goal is to alleviate hunger in 14 counties in eastern Illinois. In those 14 counties, right now we're serving about 45,000 people per month. There's really new people coming saying, I don't know why I'm here. I've got a job. I ought to be able to feed my family, but I can't. We had been working with WILL on looking at the impact of the changes in the economy here in our community. And that has opened up a lot of doors for us to be able to talk to more people about what we're seeing going on and making better linkages in the communities that we serve. I used to think of it as, I listen to WILL, and now it's like, but wait, WILL listens to us too. That's a very different relationship, a more exciting relationship for us. I'm Andrea Rendell, and I work for the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and WILL is my source for community connections.
It's 2:43. If someone steals your credit card, you can cancel the account. If someone steals your Medicare number to pay a hospital bill, it's a different story. Jennifer Moore of public radio station KSMU reports on the rise of medical identity theft.
I'm standing just inside the emergency room doors of Cox South Hospital, one of the busiest ERs in southwest Missouri. In the past few minutes alone, I've seen an elderly woman arrive in an ambulance, a police officer escort a young woman through the doors, and kids getting restless in the waiting room. Officials at this hospital say more and more of these patients walking through the doors are pretending to be someone else, just so that they won't have to pay for their own medical bills.
For instance, over the last 12 months, we had a total of 9 instances of identity theft. 4 of those have been within the last 45 days.
That's Betty Brashears, Vice President of Corporate Integrity at Cox Health in Springfield. She's teaching the hospital's ER staff about red flags that signal when a patient's using someone else's name, social security number, or insurance card.
We try to get our patients to speak their information to us so that we can confirm it, because we'll find a lot of times that if they're presenting with a false ID, they'll stumble on those words.
St. John's Health System is the other main healthcare provider in Springfield. Officials there, too, say they've seen an increase in identity theft over the past year. Hospitals across the nation are scrambling to prevent ID theft because of the particular nightmare it presents when one patient's medical chart gets mixed up with someone else's body. Pam Dixon is executive director of the World Privacy Forum and has been trying to raise awareness about this crime for years now. She says in nearly all the identity cases she's seen, medical charts are changed, and that poses the big problem.
We've had people who all of a sudden their health care record has different blood types. They have health care records with different genders and ages. different medications. There are people that we've talked with who their imposter went in and had a hospital stay and put down that they were allergic to one drug, and then the real person is not allergic to that drug, but they're allergic to other drugs.
Dixon says there's no national standard for dealing with medical identity theft. It's also hard to fix once the damage is done. And increasingly, on the national level, she says it's an insider job, with the thieves working as receptionists and accountants within the healthcare field itself. Both Springfield hospitals say all of the cases they've seen here so far involve patients and not their staff members. Dixon advises patients to get a hard copy of their healthcare records, even if there's a fee involved. That way, if your medical charts are altered, you'll have a way to prove what they used to look like. Stephen Niemczak is a special agent with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office of the Inspector General. He says the ID thieves are becoming bolder and more sophisticated.
It is a large problem that affects most corners of our country. Multiple states are involved, and these little groups work with one another across state lines.
Insurance companies are trying to crack down, too, because if someone's using your insurance to pay their bill, that means higher costs for the legitimate policyholders. Still, when it comes to medical identity theft, it's hospitals and patients who are most at risk. For NPR News, I'm Jennifer Moore in Springfield, Missouri.
Up or down, President Barack Obama says Congress needs to vote soon on sweeping health care legislation. He says he doesn't, in his words, see how another year of negotiations would help. The president is endorsing a plan under which Senate Republicans would not be able to kill the measure by stalling it with the filibuster. As if powerful industries, dubious voters, and unanimous Republican opposition weren't enough, the president also has to massage another issue, the politics of abortion. It threatens the whole effort, NPR's Julie Rovner reports.
Abortion is such a politically hazardous issue that sponsors of both the House and Senate health bills have said their object was to maintain the status quo.
It is not the intention of this bill to change the policy that has been in place for 3 decades.
That was House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer yesterday on the subject of abortion. The policy he was referring to is known as the Hyde Amendment. It's barred federal funds from being used to pay for abortion since 1977. But keeping the health bill's abortion neutral has proved impossible. The bill the House passed in November barred abortion funding in programs directly funded by the federal government, but it also banned it in private insurance plans that cover abortion if those plans are federally subsidized. Jessica Ahrens is with the Center for American Progress, a liberal think tank. She says the problem with the House bill is that it would roll back coverage for abortion many women now have in private insurance.
Anyone receiving a subsidy for their premium from the government would not be allowed to choose a plan that includes abortion. And that would apply to about 85% of people participating in the exchange.
The exchange is the new insurance marketplace the bills would create. The bill passed by the Senate in December, however, doesn't go quite as far, but it's even more confusing. It, too, would bar most direct federal funding of abortion, but it would let private plans cover abortions if people are willing to write a separate check each month for that coverage. That's something abortion rights groups find really distasteful, says Ahrens.
And I think that some of the language is not just intended to wall off public money from paying for abortion services. It's actually intended to stigmatize abortion and treat it as something other than health care and discourage people from choosing health insurance plans that offer abortion coverage.
But while abortion rights groups may not like the Senate bill, pro-life groups downright hate it. Douglas Johnson is with the National Right to Life Committee.
The Senate bill is the most pro-abortion single piece of legislation ever to reach the floor of the House of Representatives. The so-called abortion limits that are in the Senate bill are all very narrow, loophole-ridden, or booby-trapped to expire.
As a result, says Johnson,
no member of the House of Representatives who is pro-life or who wishes to have a record against federal funding of abortion could possibly vote for the Senate bill.
That's important because National Right to Life's vote rankings are closely watched by voters and lawmakers, and that raises a big red flag for leaders in both houses. Because the way Democrats are hoping to finish work on their health overhaul is for the House to pass the Senate's bill, abortion language and all. Then they plan to pass a second bill that will incorporate a number of compromises between the House and Senate. For that, they'll use the so-called budget reconciliation process that only requires 51 Senate votes. But as House Speaker Nancy Pelosi acknowledged yesterday, those compromises probably won't include a change in abortion language.
In order to be in part of the budget bill, it has to be central to the budget. That's the rule. It's a very strict rule, and it's a discipline.
Which means anti-abortion House Democrats, who originally voted for the House health bill, will likely face this choice: vote for a Senate bill that's more lenient on abortion, or vote against health overhaul. Julie Rovner, NPR News, Washington.
One of the world's venerable broadcasters, the BBC, is considering widespread budget cuts, including less spending on its website and less coverage of sports. From London, Vicky Barker reports.
Six Music.
BBC Six Music.
In its short life, BBC Six, a digital radio station, has won a cult following for its edgy, independent music. But the BBC's pulling the plug on the station. In addition, the BBC's website will see its budget cut by 25%. U.S. imports like Family Guy and Mad Men will be sharply reduced, and spending on live sports coverage capped. The BBC's Director General, Mark Thompson, says the roughly $900 million saved will be channeled back into the BBC's traditional strengths: homegrown, high-end TV dramas and documentaries.
This is a step change, and it's saying the BBC can't do everything. It needs to concentrate its investment on the services and the programmes that make the most difference to audiences.
As many as 600 jobs could go if the BBC's board approves the changes, and media analyst Steve Hewlett wonders if even more cuts are now inevitable.
I think this is the first time in history that the BBC has voluntarily decided to stop doing things it currently does. And once that genie's out of the box, it's very, very hard to put it back again.
Commercial broadcasters and online media firms here have long argued it's almost impossible to function in a marketplace where one government-backed competitor provides for free the services they're trying to sell. Now, they say, the playing field just got a little more level. For NPR News, I'm Vicky Barker in London.
In a down economy, consumers often look to conserve and recycle, which has been a boost to resale and thrift shops. Now those businesses see an opportunity. Some are moving into the empty spaces that bankrupt big box retailers left behind. To be clear, today's new superstore is not a Walmart. It's a for-profit version of the Salvation Army. New Hampshire Public Radio's Cheryl Rich-Kern has more.
A secondhand superstore called Savers is about to open on a busy retail strip in Nashua, New Hampshire. About 30 employees in the warehouse sort through the donated dishes, furniture, and books.
Look how tiny that is! It's like baby doll.
The staff rips open heavy trash bags of clothing. Out on the sales floor, the workplace is quieter.
This is actually one of our most interesting things.
Employee Tanya Mounts.
We have a Learn Russian record set from late 50s, early 60s.
The store is musty like a Goodwill shop, but well-designed like a Marshall's. It's in an old Circuit City building, and it's huge, more than 23,000 square feet. Less than 2 miles down the road sits the used books superstore. The parking lot hasn't been this packed since the building once housed another, now bankrupt, electronic chain, Tweeter.
It's going to be $13.94.
Customer Rose Watney grabs a cart and browses the children's section.
Love the fact that you're not paying full price for them, but you're getting really good books. I always walk out with more than I came for.
100,000 books are stacked on metal shelves. The store may not have the warm vibes of a coffee cafe, but it's well-lit and organized. As with the Savers store down the street, the used bookstore partners with a nonprofit organization. Used Book Superstore gets a tax write-off to donors. Owner Bob Ticehurst says in turn it pays the nonprofit 5 cents a pound for the books.
The nonprofit raises money and we're able to keep all of our operations going, so kind of a win-win for everybody.
So how are you making a profit?
It's volume. At these prices, being $1.99 and $2.99, it's not like you make a lot on every book, but it continues to add up.
Ticehurst now owns 5 stores. Like other secondhand merchants, he sticks to a simple business model: high volume, low cost of goods, and cheap rent.
According to the National Association of Resale Professionals, the multi-billion-dollar-a-year industry is growing. Over the past 3 years, the number of secondhand shops has increased 5%. Gary Musica is a marketing professor at the University of Massachusetts.
It seems like every time there's a new retail concept, sooner or later, somebody decides to supersize it, if you will.
Musica says thrift shops are typically nonprofit. He says now that they've demonstrated their potential during a recession, the for-profits are targeting the same frugal customers. Those businesses are helped because of the leasing bargains they're getting on empty storefronts. What's unclear is, when the economy turns around, how this new business model will play out. For NPR News, I'm Cheryl Rich Kern in Nashua, New Hampshire.
Coming up on the next Sidetrack, we'll profile Chatterbox Audio Theater, a Memphis-based group of actors that has moved the thrill of stage plays to the Internet. We'll hear from a historian who has created a blog focusing on newspaper personal ads of the 19th century. And in honor of the just-finished Olympics, we hear the strange story of the marathon run at the 1904 Games in St. Louis. Join host Jason Croft for that story and more, this time on Sidetrack, this Saturday at 6 p.m.
WILL programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
Earth and Sky.
We're looking at the universe with a different set of eyes than we're born with.
You're listening to astrophysicist Peter Michelson of Stanford. He's principal investigator of the Large Area Telescope on NASA's Fermi Gamma Ray Space Telescope. High-energy hotspots in the universe are revealed with gamma rays, said Michelson.
These are the highest energy form of radiation that's produced in nature. And looking at the universe with gamma ray eyes, this reveals places in the universe where particles are accelerated to very high energies.
He said in its first year of a 5-year mission, the Fermi telescope has discovered over 1,000 places that stream gamma rays.
And among those are many sources that have never been seen before, things like pulsars that are seen only in gamma ray bursts that are explosions that we see expanding at close to the speed of light.
Michelson said the Fermi telescope has also discovered many of what he calls active galaxies, centered around a massive black hole. The gravity of a black hole is so strong that not even light can escape it. Michelson added that the Fermi Space Telescope might show in greater detail than ever before what the neighborhood surrounding a black hole looks like. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3 Urbana. Online at WILL.illinois.edu, will.illinois.edu. 2 minutes before 3 o'clock, 38 degrees in Urbana. The forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon: in southern Indiana, mostly cloudy, elsewhere partly to mostly sunny, highs ranging from 34 in northeastern Indiana to 46 in far southern Illinois. Tonight in Illinois and in western Indiana, clear to partly cloudy. In eastern Indiana, mostly cloudy. Lows ranging from 17 in northwestern Illinois to 27 in the far south. The outlook for tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs ranging from 36 in the far north to 48 in the far south. This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, partly sunny, the high 38. Tonight, partly cloudy, the low 22. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, the high 43. Tomorrow night, clear skies, the low 22. Friday, sunny, the high 46. Friday night, clear, the low 24. And the outlook for Saturday, sunny.